So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, this May only, you can get an extra $200 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to therealreal.com to start selling and get your extra $200 to keep shopping at therealreal.com. That's therealreal.com. Terms apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Back with another episode of Smell You Later.
It is the last episode of Smell You Later for 2020.
Bye.
Our inaugural year, which technically we've only been around for like what, the last quarter? What are quarters?
I don't know.
I don't know business. I don't know why I keep thinking I do. I don't.
Welcome back. We're happy you're back. We're happy to be here.
We're so happy we started this podcast.
Aren't you?
One of the highlights of this year.
Really, though?
Yeah. Genuinely. I think it turned out okay.
I think it did, too. I'm so happy with what we're doing.
For our last end of year episode, we decided, why don't we just do like some sort of AMA? I don't know, like a chance to bond with the Smell You Later community.
I mean, we both have very long-standing careers in beauty, mm-hmm. and we also have a lot of people in our DMs with all sorts of questions at all times, which is great. A lot of those Smell You Later questions often bleed over into other aspects of beauty, so we like to keep them off the show because we want to keep the show really concise. But now that it's our New Year episode, we decided to have a little fun, let our hair down. It's going to be New Year's Eve very soon. We hope you all celebrate safely.
I feel like New Year's Eve is just like, just let it happen. There's no big smash off, you know?
I disagree.
Okay.
Well, there's nothing big this year.
Yeah.
We're all staying home with no one else. This is only the second year that I've not had to bartend a New Year's
Wow.
Eve in like years and years and years. And it's still a very odd feeling.
Do you miss it?
No. No. Not that I don't miss bartending, but bartending on New Year's Eve, I'd go in at 10 and we'd close the bar at 6 a.m. And then we'd have to like clean and whatever. So I'd get out and it'd be like 8 a.m. I wouldn't have slept. I'd be drunk. And it was nuts. But the worst part of it all was not even bartending itself, because people just turn into zombies. But it was the day of, and just like waiting around my apartment, just anxious and sweating. It was truthfully like the calm before the storm. And not doing anything until 10 p.m. when you finally go into the bar and just have your ass handed to you. It's just like the worst feeling.
Yeah. What do? Like nap beforehand?
I would watch Trixie and Katya on YouTube, and I'd like maybe make a long meal, something really involved, just like distract myself. And maybe I would stop by a party before, but like I wouldn't drink because like you don't want to walk into that shift with a buzz. So yeah, I'm just very happy to not be. I don't know what I'll be doing this New Year's Eve. I know it will be calm and solitary, but I'm extremely happy not to have to be behind the bar again.
Last year, I don't think I did anything. I stayed home. I think I was ill. I had a cold and I was binging You.
Oh, yeah.
That show. And you know how they say, like, the way you spend New Year's Eve is the way you're going to spend the rest of the year. Well, weren't they right?
Yeah, that's eerie.
I know. Wild. I, like, texted a couple of friends, you know, you do something, you text, and then that was it. And then I was like, what's happening here? What's going on with
I'm not one of those resolutions people.
Oh, absolutely not.
But I do love New Year's Eve, or like the idea of it. New Year's Eve is like very romantic.
It is. It can be. I actually really enjoy watching the New Year's Eve episode of The OC on New Year's Eve.
Oh, yeah. I've actually never seen The OC.
Oh, my God.
I've never seen any of it.
There's like five seasons now. It's a lot. But there's that iconic scene of Ryan rushing up the stairs of some swanky, I think like LA hotel where Marissa is at a New Year's Eve party, kind of expecting him, kind of not. And there's that skeezy guy, Oliver, who's like trying to get with her. And then at the last minute, he makes it there by midnight. And as like the confetti is coming down in slow motion, they kiss. And then Oliver's like, oh, rats, like in the background.
Ow.
Yeah. Love that. Love that song.
I love it.
Love that song that plays. And the, what is it? I forget what it's called, but I like it. Anyway.
The OC had a good soundtrack. I do know that
much.
Dude,
yes. The music popped off. What a time. What a bygone era.
I know.
Well, anyway.
Sable, what do you smell like today?
I smell like a bell. That's spelled A-B-E-L. Cyan Nori. It's a New Zealand brand of fragrance, but they do all natural perfumes, which I'm still not entirely sure what that means. Mm-hmm. But Cyan Nori is meant to be a beach smell.
Ooh.
I would say it's more of an ocean smell because what's interesting is that the like standout note is seaweed absolute. You can really smell the seaweed.
That's wild.
I know, which is weird. Like, why would you want to smell like seaweed? But otherwise, it's very musky and light. But with the seaweed, it kind of makes it a little salty.
Hmm.
So it's really interesting. On me, when I spray it on immediately, I'm like, woo, there's that salty seaweed. And then I give it a couple of minutes and then I'm like, ooh, and there's a musk. And oh, it's so nice. It just smells like that sandy, breezy ocean air.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's meant to evoke, you know, the vibe of the New Zealand coast.
Okay.
Which, you know, well done. And it's interesting because they use a plant-based musk.
Okay.
Pretty much all musks are synthetic because you can't be killing all these civets and musks anymore. Yeah, but most of the synthetic musks are made with fossil fuels.
Hmm. So, wait, with fossil fuels?
Yeah. I don't fucking know how. It's wild.
Huh.
I mean, I guess a lot of things are made with fossil fuels these days. But yeah, plant-based musk is a little bit more environmentally friendly. It doesn't last very long. That's like maybe the one frowny thing about it. And that might just be because it's a natural perfume. I think that's kind of like the MO with natural fragrances is that they don't really last that long.
I agree.
But it does sit very close on the skin. So I can smell it on myself hours later if I stick my nose into that crook of skin where I've sprayed it.
Yeah.
Which is nice. You know, some people want something that stays very close to the body. But I think it's really interesting because I've never smelled a beachy scent that had, you know, salty seaweed in it before. It's cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's unique.
Wait, can I? But I'm sure it smells great on you. I can't really smell it.
Tynan, what do you smell like?
I'm still on my imaginary author's shit.
Ooh.
And today I smell like their scent, Memoirs of a Trespasser. And I won't give you the full rundown like I did the last time I talked about imaginary authors, but this, in short, is their take on a vanilla scent, which is nice because I do love a take on vanilla no matter how it's served up to me. What I like about this one is there's a lot of resin in it. At the top, you've got Madagascar vanilla, but then you've got woody notes, myrrh, resin, some oak barrel and amber seeds. It's just a very, it's not altogether like groundbreaking, but it does what it does very nicely. On their product page, they talk about it being inspired by like exotic explorations and hallucinations.
Ooh.
So there you are. But when you first spray it on, it's a lot less vanilla forward. I would almost say that you get more of the resin and the wood right up front. So it's really nice. But then as it wears, it sort of melts down and doesn't become a total vanilla bomb by any means. It just becomes a little warmer and a little sweeter and a little bit more balanced. It's great. It's not the vanilla scent I'm going to reach for day to day, but it does bring all of that to life really nicely on the skin throughout wear. So I really like it. And I am still continuing to enjoy imaginary authors. So maybe we'll explore them later. I don't know.
But, yeah. Yeah, that sounds really cool. I like when people do unexpected takes on vanilla.
Yeah, because I mean, there's nothing that hasn't been done with vanilla, I realize. But I think that's fine. I mean, people are still allowed to play with it, you know?
Yeah.
Vanilla, we will never be able to get away from vanilla. And nope. I mean, everyone loves it. So I get it.
We kind of opened up the field to our Instagram community and you guys delivered with a fuck ton of questions, a lot of which actually were kind of variations of the same question, mm-hmm. which is interesting that everyone kind of wants to know the same things.
Yeah.
So
And a lot of you are very shaded too, which we love.
Yes.
So.
Yes, I'm a little too shady that we're like, we can't say that.
Yeah. Even we can't say that.
So yeah, we have a lot we're going to get to
as many as we want
as many as we want to. And should we just start, I guess?
Yes. Sorry, I'm dropping my jewelry. Off the rip, we have two that we're sort of going to combine into one,
yeah.
Both about XO Jane and XO Vane.
Mm. They weren't like questions so much as they were like statements.
I guess the first one, is there anything you wrote about on XO Jane or XO Vane that you have changed your mind on?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think. I've written so many random stories for XO Vane. My first story I wrote for XO Vane, it was like a walk of shame makeup look. And now I don't really think that would translate.
Okay, let's
start. To be fair, I think the look was just like smudgy eyeliner mm-hmm. and a lip stain. That was the look, which I think is pretty fabulous in general.
Yeah.
And messy hair, obviously.
Timeless.
Timeless. So do I regret it? I think maybe the tone could have been not walk of shame.
Sure.
But
hindsight.
Yeah. It was 2013. It was a different time, I think. I was a lot younger then.
And you were not the only one writing those articles.
And I wasn't, no. I don't think.
No.
But I'm trying to think of other things I've written on those sites that I'm like, no.
I think we look back at our days at XO similarly, but also differently. I don't fear anything that I wrote. And there's certainly not any one thing that I look back on, even if I got dragged, that I was like, I would change that. You have to take into account that, or I have to take into account rather, that I spent a lot of years writing on those sites, but I was also 24 and now mm-hmm. I'm 33. And like, of course, things have changed the way my beauty and skincare routine has changed. The way I want my makeup to look has changed. But also like, yeah. So no, I wouldn't change anything. But there's nothing that haunts me. I'm who I am and where I am because of everything that happened on XO Jane. And I have everything I have because of it. I'm extremely grateful.
Yeah, same.
So, but no, there's not like, there's not any one thing that keeps me up at night or that I really wish I wouldn't have said. Also, the writing on those sites was very confessional, but my beat was always strictly beauty. And not that mm-hmm. that's not personal. It everything you write is personal because you write it. But I think that was sort of a nice little buffer for me to not really show my ass online because it was always in the context of like, this is what I'm wearing or this is what I like. Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, I think I wrote a couple non-beauty stories for XO Jane. I do not remember what they were for the life of me, but yeah, pretty much everything was beauty related, and it was either like a makeup tutorial or like a skincare explainer or like a hair thing. I'm so glad that because of XO Vane, I was able to experiment so much in beauty, mm-hmm. and I was never able to do that before, either because I grew up in my parents' house and they would let me, or because of like financial restrictions. But that is a cool thing about being a beauty writer, is that you have so much access to mm-hmm. stuff that if you want to do something crazy or daring or something that you've totally never done before, like you can.
Completely. Cool. And it also gave us the room to experiment, not mm-hmm. only to your point with beauty, but just with your writing. And I took a lot of risks and had a lot of fun with the way I covered beauty online. And I was encouraged to, which was great.
Yeah.
They would have never told me to, you know, hold back on that. Clearly, not to say they wouldn't have edited things out. They did, thank God. But also our editors looked out for us. So when this spirit of go for it may have come back to bite us, I've always felt protected and supported. And
yeah,
there's nothing that ever, you know, I don't feel like I ever really fucked up, but.
I'm so glad that I learned how to write beauty on a site like XO Vane that championed your individual voice and point of view, because when I started working in-house at other editorial sites, they were like, no, we use the royal we.
Yep.
We keep things very light and just like very kind of pared down and like soulless, ostensibly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was just in service to the editorial, whatever point of the whatever piece you're working on. But there's just so much of that soulless copy in beauty, period, that period. To have something that had soul and spirit and that made you feel like there's a real person behind these words is something that's invaluable, especially in beauty. And it's so weird to me how no other sites have really cottoned on to that yet.
Many have
even
tried.
Though the formula was very successful and we just did not have the resources to flourish.
Yeah. And I've certainly found that too. Like there's, I can't get away with a lot of what I got away with on Jane anywhere else, which is fine. And I understand why, you know, even as a contributor, you have to stick with the voice of the publication you're writing for, or at least the editorial standard. So it's like, okay, I guess I can't say the F word 5 times in this article. Great. But also I'm glad that I had the space to really get that all out of my system. Not anything you know, salacious or crazy. Just, I've always been told that I write like I talk, which mm-hmm. is true. And there, I could just do that. Mm-hmm. And that was great for me. It was a great learning experience because sometimes it's like, sometimes I don't want to do that even when I have the space to. Sometimes I get sick of my own voice. So it really was an exercise in balance and figuring out how much of myself needed to be in this piece, whatever that meant, whether it was, you know, I only wanted to get this personal or I just only want to sound like myself to this extent. There will never be another situation like that, you know, and mm-hmm. I am who I am as a writer and as a person. Sorry because of it.
So yeah, I think obviously I've learned how to like hone that voice or that tone yes. for future publications, but I'm not going to lie. The reason I got all of the jobs that I did was largely thanks to XOV.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would, if it was still.
Every person I went on an interview with was like, oh, we read a bunch of your pieces on XOV. We really love that. And like, we want you to do that for us.
Yeah. Yeah. If it was still easily available, I would not hesitate to send clips from XO.
Totally. In a resume. You know what I do? You know what's crazy is that like all of the work I've gotten post XOV has pretty much been because of XOV.
Oh yeah,
I was in a fucking Dove commercial because of XOV.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Same. And I think we've both said this before, but I mean, I'm
so many doors.
The reason I have the career I have mm-hmm. right now is because everything that happened on XO yeah. and everything I was able to do with it during the time and after it.
Yeah,
you know, spirit. XO was a great launch pad for me, and the reason I'm in New York and have the job that I have right now and
yeah.
can do all this freelance shit I do on the side, and also the reason I'm sitting across from you is all because of XO.
Yeah.
You know, which is crazy. So I know everyone wants like stories, but at the same time, it's like both you and I were not in the office. I know you were more than I was toward the part of it, but I don't know. It's all good vibes.
It's all good vibes. I still think the internet is sorely lacking in what the spirit of XOV and XOJ kind of heralded.
Mm-hmm.
And like, not that I think all of it needs to stay, but I'm like, weird how beauty has exploded as an industry and yet the editorial.
Yeah, exactly. I also, and like, I know that I am a cis white man saying this, but I know that to a lot of people, XO has its own trash fire reputation mm-hmm. because of the way things played out at the end. Like, okay, fine. But I also know that the way that women's media looks now is hugely in part to what happened on sure. XO. And not anything I did. I was writing out fucking blush, but like people weren't covering things for better or worse in the way that they were before XO. And I feel like a lot of what the women at XO did was just introduce people to a new way of writing and sounding and reading. And
yeah,
I don't know.
It's kind of what influencers do now. It kind of goes into our next question, which is how did y'all meet and what were your first impressions of each other?
So Sable and I met writing. Sable and I know each other because of writing on XO.
Obviously.
We were like orbiting around each other for years. And we were in the same email thread, et cetera. Yeah. And we would talk on social. But the first time that I met Sable was, God, 2016, 2017. I'm not really sure, but I was in New York.
It was 2017 because that's when I was at Allure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sure.
And you were platinum blonde.
Yes. Fully blonde.
And I'm sure I was actually lavender. And yeah, I just went into the Allure offices because Sable was my editor at the time. And that was the first time I'd met her IRL.
On one of your many business trips in New York.
Quote, business trips. It's fucking around.
It's so strange when like you talk to somebody every day, like mm-hmm. online, and then like it never occurred to me. I'm like, we've never actually met in person until then. I was like, wait,
and
what?
And it's so funny too, because meeting someone offline that you do have a rapport with can go either way.
Yeah, that's true. That's
And I never put any stock and I like hardly get even excited about meeting like a mutual or mm-hmm. anyone. And meeting Sable was like obviously a dream, but it's there's always that moment of like, how's this gonna go, you know what I mean? But luckily like we figured it out.
I just remember I think I was on a shoot that day mm-hmm. and it was like going over time and you were like waiting at my desk and I felt like such an asshole.
Oh, please. I was like surrounded by beauty products. Yeah. So I was like, I'm fine, take your time,
like just sit at my desk, I'll be there soon.
Fully like gave myself a makeover and dyeing my hair at your desk. Like, see you in a second, I'm fine.
Wow, I can't believe that was only 2017.
Isn't that weird?
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I've known you for like years and years and years.
It's so funny. I don't know. I just remember like the next time I came, I had my personal life had taken a turn. And I came to New York on some business stuff. And I Another business trip. I came to see you. And then you were like, do you want to go to this Louboutin event with me? And I was like, yeah. So we hopped in an Uber. Yeah. And then I just started like spilling to you all this shit.
Know.
And you just gave me like the best advice as we're going to Soho in the back of this Uber. And I was just like, The internet is so weird, but thank God for it.
That Uber driver got an earful.
Yeah, totally. My God.
Yeah. Woo, events. They're fun. Remember those. This is a funny question. Money, how do you make it?
I think this marries nicely to the one a few below. What's your advice to someone trying to make it a career in beauty / writing, right?
Yes. My advice to someone trying to make it in beauty / writing is to write. Just write, self-publish, pitch.
Yes.
Pitch to outlets, freelance, get your writing on the internet. Number one.
Completely agree.
That way you exist on the internet so other people can read it. And even if it's like a newsletter, you just publish yourself. Mm-hmm. Like
you have something to show.
Yes. You have something to show. Please have a point of view. Don't do that thing where you look at what everyone else is doing that you think is popular and try to emulate it. Don't do it. It's been done.
And don't be worried about feedback or criticism either, because if you're writing to please this, you know, lofty audience, whoever that is, you're never going to actually write anything.
Yeah. Have a voice. Mm-hmm. I think that's the most important thing, is that have a voice and have a point of view.
And I only say, not to that I know everything about writing, because I certainly do not, but going back to XO, there was a point where the comment section would get like really gnarly, and I would be afraid to write anything. I would try to do these 1200 word pieces or whatever I was doing in a way that wouldn't not even piss anyone off. I wasn't being, you know, I don't know, people are idiots, but when I tried to write something that would please everyone and not stress me out the next day when it went live or whatever, I would read it and be like, I'm not saying anything here. This isn't even good. You know, like even from a like, how does this product work? I wasn't doing anything personal. I was writing about foundation.
Yeah. Don't be boring.
Just like, because that's what people are going to respond to, is your voice and your perspective.
Yeah. There's so much like safe writing out there, which to me is just, well, there's so much content out there, period. Mm-hmm. So if everyone has the same bland voice, we don't need more of that.
And yeah, to your point, just have something, have a newsletter, have a blog, whatever. That's what people are always in my DMs. Like, how'd you get where you are? And it's like, your guess is as good as mine. But when I emailed at the very beginning, Emily and Jane, I had writing on this local music blog that I sent. And they were like, it wasn't about beauty, but they were like, we love your voice. We want you on. Like, let's do this. And yeah, so not being afraid to write what you want to, making it available, sending it around, all of that. Also, I think once you do get the gig that you want, always being someone you want to work with. And I love to say yes to things. And
same.
You know, don't say yes to everything that comes your way, or don't ever, you know, get yourself in over your head. But you know, don't be that person that people are afraid to receive an email from. And also realize that your editors are all doing the work of five people. So I think there's a way to follow up gently and respectfully, because like it or not, your piece is never the first thing on their brain. So that's,
yeah, you can't take that shit personally.
No. And I take everything personally. So that's something I had to learn. And you know, that's how you're going to keep these lasting relationships. And that's how you're going to get more work, is just by being someone that people like to work with.
Oh, absolutely.
All of my writing jobs came to me from other editors that were like, hey, we like you. What's up?
When I was an editor and I had my pick of freelancers to work with, and it blew my mind how flaky so many of these freelancers were. And it's not like their work was so incredible that I was like, well, it's worth it. Yeah. Their genius takes No, it was like bland writing, deadlines passed, poor communication. And they would be like prolifically published on so many sites. And I'm like, how the fuck do you keep getting work?
Yep.
Like, I don't get it. Like things like not fact checked, just like crazy things that I'm like, you can't write that on the internet.
Yeah.
And then there was like the small handful of freelancers who were on top of their shit, always reached their deadlines, or would communicate in advance if they couldn't for any reason, asked questions, were clear on things, and just like had their shit together. And they were always the first people that I thought to throw work at when I had the opportunity to, because I really enjoyed working with them. So if you can make your editor's life easier, they will keep you around. 100%.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay, here's a good one. What are your go-to first date scents, and do you pair it with the person or choose what brings your confidence out? Mine for the longest time was the scent I would always wear the most in general, which was Byredo La Celle, which now I'm realizing is like kind of a fancier version of Santal 33.
No.
Well, okay. It's a leather-based scent.
Okay.
And Santal, I believe, is a wood, like a woody, musky woody scent. And La Celle is like a musky leather scent. So they're similar, but... And it's funny. Everyone, when I wear La Celle, you know, when you go in to hug somebody and everyone says something different, they're like, oh, you smell really good. You smell like, and then they'll say something completely off the cuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? Like some people have been like, oh, it smells like vanilla. And I'm like, no, it doesn't.
Right. Right.
And I like it as a first date scent because it's even better as a second date scent when you like do the return, because it's never the first introduction to a scent for me. It's always the second recall when everyone's like, oh my God, that's the scent you're wearing. And then it reminds you of the first time you met somebody. Mm-hmm. And that's when I get the compliment, when they're like, oh, wow, you smell really good. I'm like, because you smelled me the first time and you remembered what a great time I was. And then now you're smelling it again. So guess what? It means you're in for another good time.
I like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like you got to wear first date scents two times.
I'm with that. So the second part of this question, do you pair with the person or choose what brings out your confidence? First of all, I don't need any more confidence on a first date. Like, I hate dates and I especially hate first dates. Like, I'm sorry, my time is valuable.
Yeah.
I love my friends. I love work. If I am making time for some rando, like,
well, gee, that sounds fun.
I know, right? I'm a great first date. And I certainly don't pair anything to anyone else but myself.
How can you know? How can you tell?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to tell.
Fuck that. Fuck them. So, yes. My answer echoes yours in that I sort of wear the same thing the first couple times I see someone because
like
I want
conditioning them.
Yeah. It's like I want men to know my smell and fear it. So, and for me, that is 1996 by Byredo.
Yes.
It's a great first date scent, sure, but it's just a great scent anyway. Mm. So that's,
yeah,
I do like to keep it consistent at least from jump.
Yeah.
And then switch it up.
I want to smell good, but not overpoweringly.
No.
Like it's got to be just like an aura.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be just like, whoa, she's wearing a lot of perfume.
I basically only want people to, like, anyone to smell me when they're hugging me.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
Totally.
Let's just get this out of the way because we got this one a couple times. He's held back, but I want Tiny to explain his thoughts on Glossier U. Listen, Glossier U is fine. If you like Glossier U, you should wear it. You should be happy.
Yeah.
It's a lovely scent.
Wear what makes you happy.
It is not what I respond to, but this podcast is not about shaming anyone for what they like.
No.
It is the literal opposite. You should, whether it's music or fragrance or fashion, whatever that is, or makeup, you should only do and wear what makes you happy and screw anyone else and what they think about it. Glossier U, like, it's exactly, I don't know what I thought it was going to be when it first came out, but it makes a lot of sense for Glossier.
Yes.
You know,
I feel like it's a fragrance translation of their makeup aesthetic
and skincare. For me, like,
yeah,
I think it's a fragrance translation of their skincare because there's nothing in it.
Yikes.
No,
well,
this
it's
is,
like, the whole thing is just like looking like yourself, smelling like yourself, whatever that interpretation is.
Yeah. And that's just not how I smell in my head, which is fine.
Yeah.
I think I finally made sense of it in my head on the way here, is that I think probably my main gripe about it is that everyone loves Santal 33, which is great for them. But I feel like the Santal audience is also the Into the Gloss audience, which is also the Glossier audience, which is great. Fine. But when Glossier makes their own scent, I just feel like it was a redo of Santal 33.
It's the same dude that made it.
Same dude. Yeah,
Frank.
Same dude. Very similar fragrance. And I'm
Frank
like,
something.
Vocal.
Frank
and I'm
Vocal.
Just, and I'm just like, I like, what? Like, could just buy Santal 33. I don't know.
You know what it is? I think people like the concept of customization or personalization. And like, even the name You and the entire way the fragrance is described and marketed as like you're the last ingredient for this scent.
Yep.
And like, sure, it's true. All scent smells different.
Yeah.
Depending on her body chemistry. But I think the fact they leaned on it makes it more attractive to
totally.
People.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I mean, they took something that, you know, scent heads, a concept that they know very well, but maybe the mainstream consumer doesn't. They took that and made that their concept. And, I you know, it's great. It's smart. I just wish, I think of anything that I wish it was just a little bit separated from 33, but it's not. And that's fine. I was actually just having a conversation about with someone like very recently, and I cannot remember who it was because I haven't seen anyone, but we were talking about how differently it smells on different people. And like you said, like, we all know many fragrances smell different on different people, but I think that there's so little happening with Glossier U that it does have the opportunity to really change on people's skin, and people are really excited by that, and that's great. If you like Glossier U, wear it.
The end.
The end. It's great. Whatever you like.
And that's the final take on
fuck
that.
Fuck everyone's opinion, including my own.
Here's a good question. What's a classic that you just can't get behind? For me, personally, Chanel No. 5.
Good
it's
answer.
It's not for me.
Yeah, okay.
It's too sweet.
Hmm.
Too floral. not my bag.
I don't know that I have an answer for this.
It smells like old ladies to me. I'm sorry.
But I'm going to agree with you on that.
Yeah. Shalimar.
Oh, I love Shalimar.
Wait, I might actually be confusing that with something else.
Yeah, I might sit this one out because I don't have a hard answer and I just don't want to talk shit.
Okay.
But yeah.
Because I'm rattling off my
No, but you're right though. You're right.
Sorry, Chanel. I had a big old bottle of Chanel Allure. And I have liked Chance, and I have liked Chance. Coco Chanel.
Love Chance. I love Rose Noir. Oh, so good.
Yeah. Here's a great question. Why is Allie your favorite person who has such great taste in forest witch fragrances?
Allie Connell. Speaking of our girl.
She just is my favorite person. You just know it when you know it.
Next question, similar to the previous one. When will you have Hugh Banks on as a special guest? Never, because any scent that he wants to talk about is definitely one that is not appropriate for our show. I'm only asking this because I have an answer for it.
Okay, I don't. So you can feel this.
Okay. Someone asked, if your co-host was an item in the grocery store, what would they be and why? And if Sable was anything in the grocery store, you would be a giant blueberry.
Oh my God. You know what? You really nailed it. You nailed it.
And I only say that because Sable has a few things that she will always share on her Instagram story, as I do. But Sable's specifically are any sort of cup content,
yep.
Round boys, yep. Like round birds, round animals. And Sable has this way of always procuring gigantic fruit, specifically yes. Berries and blueberries. It's just one of her things.
Yes. The little bodega by me has freakishly large GMO produce and I have freakishly small hands. So it kind of just works out that way.
Yeah.
Ooh, here's a good question. We're digging deep here.
I might let you drive on this one.
Okay. Should you end things with someone because you like them more than they like you? Well, I think there's a lot of context that is required for this scenario. But my universal rule with anything in life, not even romance, but it tends to very much so work for romance, is that I don't want anything that doesn't want me.
Every time you say that to me, it just blows my mind. I get completely galaxy brain.
Why would you want, like, to me, the least attractive thing a person can do is not be 100% into me. If you're fucking me around, I don't like you. I like you significantly less than I did before you were fucking me around.
For real.
Yeah. And
first of all, who would not be 100% into you?
I could probably tell you many people. let's interview them.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, like, you don't want some. Well, maybe you do. I don't know. I also think that this is like a big thing tied to self-worth. And that's like something I've been uncovering in quarantine, is like, I think I have like a very healthy amount of self-esteem and confidence. But then all relationships touch your most vulnerable trigger points deep within you that if you have not confronted, oh, you fucking will.
Mm-hmm.
Once your emotions are on the line. And that to me is something that I realize I need to work on, because in the past I've definitely hung around people like I could tell they were wishy-washy or unsure, and you know, we enjoyed each other's company and we had a great time together, but I was like, yeah, I would feel a lot better if I knew how you felt about me.
Yeah.
Or if we just cleared the fucking air and you're like, hey, you're really great, but I don't really see us being in a serious partnership.
Yeah.
Which is also fine, and then we can just like hang and like not have the tension.
Yeah.
But if you really like somebody and they don't really like you as much, I think you should look elsewhere.
I know that like walking away from some, as you said, context is super important. But
yes.
Like in my head, walking away from some things that are not serving you or that aren't making you feel the way that they should.
Yeah.
That can be obviously very scary. And a lot of the times you think you have so much wrapped up in one person or whatever, and there's so much weight in that. But it's like you also have to remember, like, you will be fine on your own.
Of course. There's 8 billion people on this planet.
Exactly. You don't need any of them. Yeah. You're going to be fine on your own. But like, if you do want to end up with someone, there will always be someone there who is going to like love you the way you deserve to be loved.
Everyone deserves love.
And people should be obsessed with you. Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
Now, you specifically, and also just like you, listener, like, you should not settle for anything.
You
less.
Should never wonder where you stand.
Yes,
with somebody.
Yes. There should never be a question. There is, to me, the reason I approach relationships with caution is because I can be very obsessive and I don't, not obsessive, but like I don't do anything half assed. So it's like if I'm in, I'm in. So like not everyone deserves that. But why was I going with that?
Be careful who you invest your energy
into. Yeah, it's like there's nothing worse to me in any situation than like any sort of dissonance or disconnect. And it's like, and also like you never want to be that person to the other person. I never want to like someone more than they like me. Wait, what? I never want to like someone more than like me. Yeah, because that sucks too. It's just like you're being fucked around either way.
Yeah. I mean, you have to catalog what you want and why. Also, what do you like about this person? And is it that they like you, but they're not ready for a relationship? Because someone can really, really like you, but if they're not ready for you, it's not going to work.
And it like may not seem this way at the time, but like you should never have any doubts, like like continued doubts, you know what I mean? And if there are, it's always better to just cut it off, you
know
just get
really
out of there,
hard,
dude.
But once your emotions are removed, like if you can zoom out, it's super hard to do this, and I've been trying to do this myself. If you can zoom out of your own emotions and just set them aside and just look at things in a very as neutral as possible way, the answer comes to you so quickly. And then it's just you regulating your own emotions. That's the work.
Yeah. If you don't look out for yourself, no one else is going to. And you got to really protect your energy.
You do.
Not to sound like an Instagram shaman, but like you genuinely, like I am so about like protecting my space.
Yes.
And I mean, it's really easy in quarantine because I can't see anyone, but.
Not everybody deserves the place you hold for them in your heart.
No, especially the people who are supposed to like love you or whatever. It's like we're dealing with our work and our families. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if I'm dating you, you have to not fuck with me and not fuck with my head.
Yeah.
Period.
I mean, sometimes it's unintentional, but like in good faith, you know, no one should be fucking you around.
Yes.
Truly. I do this thing too. It's kind of chaotic, but it works for me. If I have a feeling like this is not going to end well for me, I suddenly become so much less apprehensive on communicating very directly because I'm like, look, I'm getting iffy feelings. What's the fucking deal? Like, here's my deal. What's your deal? And then that's a very quick conversation you can have. I mean, this is like a pessimistic way to go about things. But like, if you're already like, the vibes are off for me, then you know. At least you know. Like, sometimes uncertainty is worse.
Yeah.
And you cannot wait for someone to give you that certainty. Sometimes you just have to give it to yourself. She anyway, I should take my own advice.
Yeah, well, same. But that was a bar sable. That was awesome.
I hope that helped. Anyway, moving along. Ooh, this is, oh my gosh, people, you need, I'm so sorry. How the fuck do you get over someone you've been crushing on for 4 years but never dated? I don't know if I'm qualified to answer that.
I think there's even more context here.
That, yeah.
Needed.
4 years.
Except I know.
That's a presidential term.
Yeah.
Good Lord. This is like straight up discipline, dude. I grapple with the concept that, because I believe in it, and I also believe that there's like caveats that you can control the way you feel. And I think that's true to an extent.
I agree.
And a lot of that has to do with choosing how you want to feel and then sticking to it and being disciplined. So if you want to get over this person that you've been crushing on for 4 years but never dated, I think you have to commit to getting over them. And you cannot indulge the little tender-hearted moments. But yeah, it's fucking hard. I've never liked anyone for that long.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I think it would be helpful to know if this person has let that person know or not, but we don't know that. So, 4 years, dude.
Cut them off for your own sanity, sadly.
I also think that we just live with our feelings for people and maybe compartmentalize them and walk away from them and do what we have to do. I don't know, but 4 years sounds like a long time, and you need to figure that out.
Also, like, I think it's possible that you can love someone from afar.
Yeah.
You can have feelings for someone and not necessarily have to act on them. And, you know, that's a totally fine thing to do. Mm. Not every feeling requires an action. And this sounds like it might be one of them. Moving along. How is it working in beauty versus what people showcase online?
I love this question, but I'm not sure how to answer it.
Honestly, I think it's what all social media is. All social media is a performance.
Yes.
The fact that you are posting shit publicly is a performance. I don't care what you're posting. Mm-hmm. As soon as it's on a public social media platform, it's performance.
Which is fine.
For like, better or worse.
Like, yeah. I have no energy for the conversation of like...
performative.
Like, all social media is fake. Like, of course. Yeah. Like,
not that it's fake, that it's just... it's curated.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's, yeah.
And that's fine. And that's fine.
But just know that.
Sable and I have similar CVs in that, you know, we're beauty writers, but we do brand work as well. I'm full-time with the brand. Mm-hmm. And
I'm a dilettante.
Yes.
By choice. Working in beauty, it's a lot of strategizing, editorial content, seasonal content, a lot of fucking emails. So many emails. And yes, you do get a lot of free swag, which is great. But other than that, you're just kind of like at a desk.
Yeah.
It's kind of just a desk job.
Exactly. Exactly. And like brand wise too, it's like when you roll out a product, there are months and months and months of having the same kind of conversation over and over.
So many meetings that could have been emails.
Oh my God. I've learned quite a bit about why launches look the way that they do, why the consumer might have this question, or why things were positioned in the way that they were to like get in front of these questions or criticisms most of the time. Mm. I don't want to say too much.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, to your point, like we only show the good shit.
Of course. Duh.
Like, I'm obsessed with my job, but it doesn't make me want to die a lot of the time. Yes.
Such is the concept of jobs. That's just what having a job is. Yeah. Let's move along. Most common fragrances to smell on strangers in NYC, LOL.
You know what my answer to this is.
I know what your answer is. Back in the day, I used to love walking around my neighborhood on like a Friday or Saturday evening when everyone's out and about, they're bar hopping, mm-hmm. and you'd walk past a group of usually women and you just like kind of momentarily get like absorbed into their cloud of scent. And I feel like a lot of it was Jean-Paul Gaultier. It's that classic. It's like the bottle that looks like a lady figure. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like a lot of the Kylie or like the KKW fragrances or ones that smell just like them. Like a lot of like clouds of white florals and vanilla.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say I've noticed men in New York have not let the whole Cool Water, Light Blue, Acqua di Gio die. And they wear it in. Yeah. I think they take the atomizer off and pour it. And I'm like, these, you know, we may be sick of these as a society, but as scents, they're pretty good. They're just, we know them all fairly well, but there's, I find a lot of that.
Isn't it funny how like, I feel like the scents you always smell walking past a person, they're always the same types of scents. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's just the nature of, like, if you're the kind of person who likes that type of scent, you just wear it in fucking spades.
Yeah. It's like just that, you can't separate the scent from how it is worn.
Yeah. Totally. What are the scents you get the most compliments on? That would be My Standby by Rita Lassell.
Yeah.
When I wore Chanel Allure, strangers would stop me and ask what it was.
Wait, this is such a dumb question, but did you wear Allure because you worked at Allure?
No, I had a bottle of that since I was like in college.
Oh, that's right. That's
Yeah. Long, long time. I still like that scent.
The ones that I get the most compliments on all day long are... Cloud by Ariana Grande, Unbreakable by Chloe and Lamar, and 1996. But I also wear quite a bit of 1996 and Cloud. Yeah.
Is there a scent you can always clock on someone else, even though you've never worn it? Santal 33. I can always clock it on somebody else. I'll like say it to you. I'll be like, is that Santal 33? And they're like, yeah.
How did you know? Oh my God, yeah.
I just like knowing that I'm right.
The one for me is Diptyque 34 Boulevard Saint Germain.
Yes. Did I say that right? A very distinct scent.
Yeah, it's beautiful too. I really like it. And I say that because my best friend has worn that for years and years and years. So I can clock it anywhere.
Ooh, also I should say Tom Ford Black Orchid. I can clock that on anybody.
Yeah.
And Chanel Chance.
Yes.
I think also because that's also kind of a popular perfume.
I think this is also all contextual because I know this Diptyque one because of my friend. I know Chance because of my girlfriend in college. Mm-hmm. These are always scents that I've spent a lot of time around.
Clinique Happy. I can smell that anywhere. No one really wears that now.
That's not
no one it. I know, but how do you thoughtfully pick a fragrance as a gift? We kind of touched on this in our gift guide episode and the consensus was to ask your gay son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ask your gay son. Have a gay son.
Yep.
Support him.
Support him and ask for 18 him about full years and then ask him.
Yes. So what I have done mostly for myself is if you know that someone you love really likes one note or one thing, it doesn't even have to be a note in fragrance. Take coffee, for instance. There is a website called Fragrantica, which Sable and I use religiously. Mm-hmm. And they break fragrances down in a really detailed way using the notes. But their search function is great. You can search fragrance, you can search brand, and you can also search notes. So I am obsessed with coffee. So if I go in and search coffee, it's going to populate with all scents that have coffee in them, which I think is really great. And that's helped me pick new scents that I love. So if I search coffee, it's going to give me what, you know, Elizabeth and James bourbon that has no coffee in it. Just kidding. But you know what I mean? So if, yeah. if you know, this is a really great tool to find scents that, yeah. you know, someone will at least respond to, or, you know, you at least have a reason for being. It's yes. like, I know you like this, so you might like this. Mm-hmm. It's not a total shot in the dark.
Yeah, of course. Or just make sure you include a gift receipt.
Yeah, just get a gift card. Save us all the trouble.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That also works. Which celebrity do you think smells the best?
Rihanna, obviously.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. What celebrities have I smelled? I have smelled James Franco. To be fair, it was at a Coach event. I'm pretty sure Coach kitted him out with his outfit. So he just smelled like a new leather jacket because that's what he was wearing. And leather jackets smell good. So it was a fragrance event, too. I don't know if he was wearing the fragrance, but he was a terrible interview. Anyway, but he smelled great, like a leather jacket. Pierce Brosnan.
Ooh.
I bet he smells good. I had a Pierce Brosnan encounter once. I was literally like 21. So I don't remember how he smelled, but he's a very elegant man. I pushed a pen off a table and he picked it up, like Clueless style.
Oh my God. Where were you?
Oh, I was interning at a casting agency and I was like the check-in girl. I would like the talent would come check in, do their auditions, and I was like sitting outside the door like announcing them or whatever, collecting their headshots. And it was like Pierce Brosnan, Susan Sarandon, one of the Culkins, Kieran or Rory, oh my God, I'm not sure.
Iconic.
And they were like going in and out of a studio door next door, probably doing a reading or something. And then Pierce Brosnan came out and he just like stood outside. I think they were taking a break or something. And I guess he thought like maybe I worked for the studio that was like in their room because I was next to it. And I just like remember thinking like, I don't know why. Me and my 21-year-old hubris. I was like, I'm going to knock this pen off this table with my elbow.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
And see what he does.
So you were baiting him with
yes,
the pen.
Yes, I was.
I'd have taken it.
You know, if he didn't pick it up, I don't fucking care. But he did. And he goes, oh, drop this. This cute little Irish accent.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wasn't the second part of this, what celebrities smell the worst?
Oh, yes. Okay.
Katy Perry.
Really? She has so many fragrances.
I know.
I don't know. I've never thought about this.
Thoughts on the new Byredo Tobacco Mandarin. I think it would be especially up your alley, Sable.
You know what? I thought that as well.
I thought that as well.
And I got it. It's not my favorite Byredo. It's very strongly leathery and smoky. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a lot of Mandarin from it. I don't know if that was like a literal naming. Didn't get a lot of citrus at all. It reminds me a lot of, I knew we said we wouldn't talk about ex. You know what? I'm not saying it. I'm not
say
saying it.
Say it.
Okay. It smells a lot like an ex-boyfriend. Not in a bad way, in a good way. But I'm like, why do I do this to myself?
We are the ones editing this episode. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah. I think I described it as an Illuminati cowboy scent. Mm-hmm. And I stick to that.
Yeah. I like it. I find a lot of Byredo scents to be pretty singular in what they're doing. And mm-hmm. I don't feel this way about Tobacco Mandarin. I am with you in that I don't get almost any citrus. Mm-mm. I do get a lot of leather,
a lot of
smoke,
leather.
Resin, maybe incense. I do think that a lot of those notes can wear really heavily and get stale and sort of in your nostrils. And this does not do that. And I think that the reason is because all of those notes are riding on this citrus note that you don't really get, but it does help the longevity of the scent. I really like it. I don't think it's like, stop what you're doing. You have to smell this. Mm-hmm. I do think a lot of people are going to love it. So it's, you know, it's great. I'm happy it's here. I don't die for it.
I think it smells better the longer you wear it.
From
the jump, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And then once it warms up and kind of cooks on your skin a bit, that's the money scent.
Yeah. Definitely. I completely agree. Yeah. I think it's a lovely scent. I would probably reach for any other of my Byredo collection before this.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
You have to wait for it. It's a slow burn.
Yeah.
But it's a good burn.
Why do you guys like DS and Durga so much? I truly hate them with all my heart. That sounds like a you problem, sweetheart.
Whoa, that's personal.
We love DS and Durga. We've already talked about
like
this.
Like their scents.
They're great.
Yeah. If you listen to any of the first three episodes of this podcast, we explain in full gratuitous detail why we like them so much.
And then the first interview we did was with David from DS and Durga. So I mean, the answer is there. And also they're great. Sorry, I know fragrance is all subjective, so we can have different opinions, but mine's right.
Just re-listen to those first four episodes.
And also they have a ton of scents. You tell me you hate them all.
Yeah.
Who hurt you?
Who? Apparently Diaz and Durga. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry to that man. Ooh, thoughts on clean fragrance.
I feel like I've made my stance on clean products known.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll do an episode on this.
I'm sure we will. I don't have any thoughts on clean fragrance, to be honest. About them.
I will say that the beauty podcast Breaking Beauty has a really, really incredible episode about clean beauty. It's a couple months old. I can figure out what the title is. It's great. They talk to an actual scientist about what clean beauty actually means. And without going down another one of my rabbit holes, I'll leave it at that. But if you, listener, have any feelings or thoughts about clean beauty, clean fragrance, check out that episode of Breaking Beauty. It is very educational, no matter what side of the fence you stand on. So
hear, hear.
And I'm sure we'll do an episode on clean beauty ourselves. So
yeah. What scent has given you the most seduction success? There's no way for me to say this without... Okay, if you're a family member of mine, stop listening right now.
Oh my God, right? Oh my God. I feel so bad. My mom and dad fucking listen to this. And I'm really? Like, all I talk about is like how my hands smell like dick. Like,
I don't think my parents know what podcasts are. Thank God. And I will not do not tell them what podcasts are.
So embarrassing. They're listening like, why?
Let's just... The most polite way I can say this is my natural womanly scent. Never had any...
That genuinely was not what I thought you were going to say.
Opposite of, okay, I'm going to fucking cut that out.
Don't leave it. Leave it.
Only rave reviews. Anyway, you know what? Take your probiotics.
I just didn't expect that to go that direction. And I love that it did. I'm here to support you. For me, it's 1996. So yeah, I mean, it's just, it's what I wear. So.
You know what? If all else fails, there's always 1996.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, here's a nice broad question. Moving along. What are your next career and life goals? Sister beats the fuck out of me. That's not true. I actually have a lot of them. I would like to be able to buy art. It's a life goal of mine. Like real, not real. All art is real, but like I want to be able to throw a ludicrous amount of money at an artist and have a big ass piece of their work on my wall. That'd be great. I would like to live in a building with an elevator. Not a fifth floor walk up. That would be great one day. They're all like real estate. Basically.
Oh, sorry.
I want a roof or a backyard. I want, those are life goals, I guess. Ooh, yeah. I want a pied-à-terre somewhere. I want to like have two houses, different coasts.
I love
That's a life goal of mine. Career goal. I had an idea for an app that I don't know how to get off the ground because I don't know how, I need a business partner. I don't know how to fucking do business or tech. So, whoops. But I'm like pretty sure. I'm like, this would be a great idea.
Yeah, that idea is really good. And you've been talking about it for a while.
And like, what's crazy is like, I've had this idea for like since before I worked at Allure, and no one has done it yet.
You have.
And I'm just like,
you have to do it. You also,
it's so obvious.
You have everything you need to do it. You just need the person to help, which is fine. You can.
I need a business person or like a tech person. I don't super love the idea of like getting venture capitalists on board before anything's. I don't even like the idea of venture capitalists. So like, I don't want your money. Like, I don't want bosses, basically. Maybe I'll write a book. Maybe that's like, it's like a career side thing. Yeah. I don't know. What are your career and life goals?
God.
I want to write a TV show. Throwing that in there, too.
Love that. For me, I, career-wise, always want to be in beauty. I am sort of always thinking about my next move. And, you know, I wanted what I have right now for so long. You know what I mean? And now I have exactly what I wanted. And it feels foolish to like want anything else.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
You just like keep wanting shit until you die.
But it's like, that's the thing about hunger. It's like you're never sated for long. And it's like...
Terrifying.
I don't know. I think I just... I have a few ideas of what I want to do next, but I don't know when next comes. And that's okay.
Nobody knows now.
And... Yeah, career-wise, I don't always want to be with a brand. I don't know. It's like, I had so much fun at editorial, but I don't really want to do that either, but I always want to be in beauty. So what that means for me, I don't know. And I probably should have that nailed out more than I do. But every time I do have a plan, the world has a way of like showing me that I don't know anything. So I am extremely lucky and grateful to be where I am. And I don't want to fuck that up, but I also need to realize that like, my success and worth as a person does not hinge on my job or whatever brand that I'm with. So
absolutely not.
Yeah. Like I had all this, like I was exactly who I am before I started this job or whatever. So anyways, mm-hmm. all respect to what I do now. I mean, it's not anything. I just,
so. You know, you want to grow in your career.
Yeah.
I feel like once you get over that hump of imposter syndrome, then you're like, oh, okay, cool. I'm doing this. And then the next thing is generally like, all right, but what else or what more mm-hmm. can I do? And do I want to do?
Yeah. And the imposter syndrome is thick with this one. So
I still get imposter syndrome truly, yeah. but I just fake it till I make it, and it's never steered me wrong so far. That's sort of what I've been doing
too. It's yeah. like, God. Life goal. It's funny because all of mine went straight to real estate too. I just want to like a door guy because I'm so sick of missing packages. I've been thinking a lot about moving to another place in New York. So I've been.
That's so fun.
And is it?
Yes. Hey. Well, like picking in the place, I love decorating.
It all gives me so much anxiety.
I will decorate your new place.
I never want to move again. There's this cloud couch that I've been talking about for like 2 years.
My God,
and
yes.
I'm definitely buying it. I also found a cloud headboard. So my next place might have a lot of cloud moments happening. But excellent. It's like, I keep asking, I'm sure I've said to you, it's like, what's the point of moving from one studio to another? But it's like, now I've been here for a year and a half. I know the city.
Oh, you know
like,
the point.
Yeah. So I don't know. Life, like, I would think I want to stick around. And I want to stay in New York for as long as I want to be here, but I don't ever want to feel tied to it because I'm New York is amazing, but I've also lived a lot of other places and like might want to go back to Madison in 5 years. I might want to never go back to anywhere. I might want to stay here forever, but I don't want to feel tied to anywhere because of my job or anything
sure.
else.
Yeah. That's the thing about New York. You can always come and go as you please and it will always welcome you back.
Yeah.
I always had this like funny saying that like the more I thought about it, the more I was like, wow, that is kind of true. And that like the hardest thing to do in New York is just to walk in a straight line. It's like that's the hardest thing to do in New York City is just to walk in a straight line.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people and things are always moving. Uh-huh. But you know, you think of those fabled stories of Madonna came to New York with $300 to her name and look at her now. And truly, this is a city. If you work for it, it will pay you back in spades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes a certain type. Madonnas. It takes the Madonnas of the world to make it work like that, but it's possible.
Yeah.
If you want it. It's just nice to know.
Yeah. You I'm know? Also just in that place. I'm like, what the fuck?
I'm lazy as fuck, but like,
we're not.
It's just nice to know that if I suddenly gained a ton of discipline and ambition, then like, you know, things could improve.
Yeah. I feel like I'm fucking working all the time right now and not yeah. just at my day job. Like, but it's like, it's all work that I want to do, which is yeah. great. I'm like, this is not a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what I'm saying anymore.
Anyway, it's like, this is going to get really dark if you keep going here. fictional character whose hair you most want to emulate. I feel like I've done it. Like I'm in my Narcissa Malfoy stage right now. And mm-hmm. I did the Rogue thing, which I'd wanted to do since I was literally 13 years old. I did the whole blonde thing. Yeah. I feel like I've done them all.
I'm kind of the same way. My hair has been every color. And I genuinely, when I grew it out to my natural color last year, which is a very dark brown, it's like I was just bored.
Mm.
You know, it was just like, I've never tried to shock anyone with my hair or the way I look or whatever, but it's like the most exciting thing to me at this point that I could be is just my natural color, you know? So
that's nice.
Here we are.
Yeah.
However, she's not fictional, but Jade from Little Mix in the Sweet Melody video, which came out recently, she has some crazy hair. Not crazy. She just looks like a video game character because she's short and her hair is super long.
I love like cartoonish video game aesthetic.
Yeah.
It's like so done, good. Like translated into reality. I love that.
Yeah.
I feel like what's funny is I feel like I always look at like the girls of Blackpink and what they're doing with their hair. And obviously they have a glam team mm-hmm. to work with them. And what's really funny is like with many other K-pop groups, with every video or new drop they do, they'll change their look.
Yeah.
And when they came out with their How You Like That music video, Jenny had the front streaks like I had. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, interesting. And then when they came back around again with their Ice Cream video featuring Selena Gomez.
Written by Ariana Grande.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. Wow. Lisa had the blonde underneath. So I was like, who on your team is looking at my shit?
Someone's following you.
Who?
I am not very educated with K-pop or Blackpink. I know I like all of their stuff that I've heard, but I will say when they started teasing this era
mm-hmm.
with those sort of like icy, like really editorial shots,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, this is good. I mean, they're all like drop dead gorgeous girls, of course. But like that, whoever concepted that shoot, I was like, this is quite good.
They pull out all the stops. Yeah. Rosé has that super long, almost anime cartoon hair that she just flips the shit out of on stage. Yeah. And I'm like, how much of that is extensions? I feel like it would hurt hair flipping extensions a lot. But yeah, that's kind of like the hair I want. I'm like, I want hair down to my ass.
But what else would you do with extensions if you're not going to flip them around? You're a pop star, you know?
Right? That's the point. You're supposed to throw them. They're meant to be airborne. Yeah. I would love flippable length hair one day. We'll see. I always get too impatient when I grow my hair and then I end up cutting it again.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, here's a great one. What's your favorite Buffy episode? And which episode do you hate? My favorite Buffy episode is Hush. It's the one with the whole town. Their voices get stolen so no one can speak. And then there's these creepy dudes. Their only weakness is like human voice. So that's why they stole the entire town's voices. And they go around, I guess, disemboweling people to take their hearts or organs or whatever. And then Buffy has to obviously kick their ass. And then she breaks open whatever magical box that has their voices. And then she just screams and then like they all die. But that episode was so scary. I loved it so much. And the episode I hate, and I don't like dislike it, I just hate it because it's so traumatic, is The Body. And that's the one where her mother dies. Mm. And like, I cannot watch that without having a full on breakdown.
Aye.
Yeah. It was so well done too. The way the episode was shot and everything was so well done, which speaks to, I guess, just the masterpiece that is Buffy.
Was her mom a vampire?
No. Oh. Just a lady.
I'm going to get doxxed for saying this, but I've never seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So,
well,
I know people love it.
We got months of quarantine ahead. It. So it's wasn't on Hulu.
Wasn't there a musical episode?
Yeah. Oh, you know what? That actually might be my most hated episode. I take it back. That's my most hated episode. I just don't like when they do music. I think that was actually in the show's history, their most popular episode. But I just don't like musicals.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I'm just not into it. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because now you set me straight.
Yeah. Hey,
you who never watches it. Buffy.
The one thing I know about Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Based on your personal experience, how rampant is nepotism in the industry?
Hmm.
Hmm. You know what? I will say that, and maybe this isn't exactly what you meant by this question, but media, beauty and fashion media, which is the only media I know, I do feel like nepotism obviously benefits anybody, but in terms of how little you're willing or able to work for, works in your favor. Because in general, editorial positions are not well paid unless you're a director or
like
editor chief.
At all. They like are not livable.
Yeah. So you could work at a super glossy title, but be paid like 25 grand a year. But if you come from a wealthy family, you're like, okay, who cares? And then your life looks so glamorous because you work at a fancy magazine, you're getting paid fucking peanuts, but you probably live in, you know, your family's rent controlled like Upper West Side brownstone because you don't need the money. And that job to you is probably just spending money. So in that sense, I think there's quite a bit of nepotism.
Before I moved here, you know, there's a lot of talk in media about who can afford to work their way up to these glamorous positions. Mm-hmm. And to your, not to repeat what you said, but it's because all these positions don't, I mean, many positions, not all, but don't pay anything. They don't pay a living wage. So it's like, if you can work for 28 grand a year because you don't have to have that money to pay your rent, to do this, to do that. I never really understood that until I moved here and was not more immersed in media, but just maybe more immersed in New York City itself, and saw that that was not unique to media. I'm gonna, never mind, I shouldn't.
No, it's absolutely true. And the more impressive the title, the less they pay. Because they know they're always gonna find somebody who's willing to work on that skint of a budget, which is shitty, but that is how it goes. That's why I suggest you freelance before. Freelance for as many places as you can, work up a reputation, and then once you're big shit, then you can do all the salary negotiations you want. That's one way to do it. Or just be rich yourself, if you can. What is the discrepancy between the perceived and actual glamour of working in beauty? It's a pretty glamorous job. You get to try some bougie ass, expensive ass shit. Mm-hmm. And you just get products thrown at you daily. It's very, very swaggy. And occasionally you get wined and dined by brands. They take you on fancy trips. Mm-hmm. They take you to Michelin star restaurants. So it's very glamorous in that respect. But at the core of it, you're still a cog in a machine. Okay, this is like strictly... I don't want to sound dark. That really depends on what part of beauty you're involved in and how involved you are in it. If you're like full-time at an editorial outlet, it is essentially you're scheduling, planning, editing. So that's the actual job. And at the end of the day, especially if you work for like a big corporation, like your job is basically doing what's in their best interest to make money in terms of advertisers, promoting SEO content and commerce, optimizing commerce constantly. So really what you're doing in that regard is making a corporation richer while you get a measly 2% merit-based raised every year. So that's not very glamorous, but you get lots of free shit. So, you know, take what you want.
I think it also just sort of depends on like what you think is glamorous. Cause even, you know, I freelanced for so many years. I still got it. I freelanced in the Midwest. Like I was not immersed in like the New York beauty scene, but I wrote for big enough publications that I was still, you know, getting these like boxes on boxes of free shit and this and that. And, you know, everyone wants something from you, and it is sort of a fine line to walk of being authentic to the work that you want to do and not being owned by anyone, meaning your publication or the brand, because, you know, at the end of the day, to your point, you are still doing a job for someone else, and the dinners are nice and the chips are nice, and people are very, very seduced by the free product. And I understand why, because on the outside, it looks great. And on the inside, it is great. But at the same time, there is just a lot of that sort of like day-to-day monotony, the politics that you get in every job. And yeah, so no one owes their career to a box of free product. I like to remind myself that. And you are not beholden to any brand, even though, you know, there may be a dinner here or a trip here or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. It's like...
If all you care about is getting free shit, it's great.
It is great.
It's so great. Yeah. If you have primarily creative ambitions, you're going to have to work really hard, because you're probably going to have to do double your job of maintaining the status quo and improving all of your metrics, plus taking these creative risks. So I think that's why people who make their job their life, you know, who have no work-life balance, they exceed, because that's what they care about, is doing their career. And that works for them. But if you're actually trying to have like a healthy work-life balance, it can be stressful.
That's a really good point, Sybil, because, you know, I work for a brand right now and I am the copywriter and the voice of the brand, which sounds great, and it is. But it's like with that, there's a lot of input from a lot of people. And I realized early on that this job, though it is literally the dream job and I love it, and I'm obsessed with it every day, I cannot rely on it to creatively fulfill me.
Yeah.
Because there's only so much of me that I can put into this job, or rather, there's only so much of me that then come through in this job, because it's a brand, because it's not me.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's fine. That's why I freelance so much, and that's why I do this, and why I'm so on my side hustle, because like that is my work and that is my voice. Whereas when I'm at work, it's like, this is all of us. And like, I may be getting this voice from A to B, but it's not me. And that is okay. So I think I had to realize early on that like, this can't be all for me. And not to say that like, oh, I'm too creative, just do one thing. That's not it. But it's like, I have to have this outlet for myself so I can be successful during the day.
Yeah, same. I feel like I always prioritize creative ambitions and creative satisfaction above material perks. So to me, that's what's important. With any job, really, but especially in beauty, because, you know, it's so easy to just like shit out all of these like gallery reviews, these roundups. It's so easy. And that can be a big part of the job. But truly, what are you doing here?
Yeah. And you know, and I still do enough of that, too. But I always does feel very monotonous. Mm-hmm. But I remind myself that people are on the other side of the screen Googling these things because they have a need or they have a want or they just want to learn. And like, yes, like doing another gallery makes me want to blow my brains out half the time, but it's like,
it's helpful.
It is helpful. And there is an audience and there's a reason for it. And you know, that's, I think when you have the room to put a little bit of yourself into something, it's always more gratifying. But remembering like the point of this all, someone's going to read that article, find something they love and use it. and enrich their life. So it's like, yeah, you have to find these things. Like, yeah, you have to find a reason to keep going, sure, you know?
Okay. Switching gears. Is dating in New York as hard as most people say it is? I don't think it's hard at all. I think there's so many people in the city that you could date a new person every night. But do you have the energy for that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Some people do.
Some people do. God bless them.
Yeah.
It's not hard. I think what's difficult about it is what's difficult about any sort of dating is that getting to really know a person takes vulnerability, energy,
time,
patience, generosity. And that's true everywhere. But if you just want to go on a date and like have a nice sexy dinner, or like a sexy drink with someone, there is always someone willing to buy you a drink in New York.
Yeah, that is very true. I've only been here a year and a half, and I think I'm just speaking to dating in general, which not if you need to hear my perspective on. But yeah, I feel like dating sucks anywhere. If it sucks for you, you know?
I think it's different than dating in a small town because maybe in a smaller town, everyone knows each other or like everyone's dated each other in their age group.
Well, and I also think a lot of people in New York think, look at dating as a sport.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't say that cynically. I just like, you know,
it's like a thing to do. It's like an activity. It's a social activity, which is fine. They're fun. And sometimes if you don't have the expectation of like, is this person the one?
Yeah.
It's just fun to get to know somebody.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've stopped taking it so seriously. I'm just like, who are you? What are you about? How do I feel with you? Mm-hmm. Are you cool? What's the deal? You want to get some spaghetti?
I also think like everyone dates for a different reason.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everyone's looking for something.
Yeah.
Specific.
And it may not align to what you're looking for, like, which is fine. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it really depends on what you're looking for. If you just want to have a nice drink with someone, then it's totally easy. And it's funny because I don't drink, but so many first dates happen at a bar because it's just it's easy
and it's low pressure.
It's low pressure. If you need to bail, you always know where the exit is. But I would order usually like a club soda, and then that to me is like a litmus test. If they panic that I ordered a club soda, I'm like, oh, okay, you're really insecure. Got it.
Yeah.
And you know, it's easy when you have tiny little low stakes things like that. That's just a way to see how a person reacts to you. Yeah. And I'm like, sorry, bub, you're going to have to seduce me fully sober.
Flip side, me just getting blasted on every first day.
But don't worry, I still make questionable decisions.
Yeah, right? I don't need alcohol to be an idiot.
Sadly.
How do you prefer to meet guys in New York or anywhere?
I mean,
because New York is scary. New York is not scary. Dating is scary.
Sure. I've met people in so many ways in New York City. Mm-hmm. So many meet cutes, so many app meets. Mm-hmm. Yeah, once the apps popped off, then that became a primary way to meet people. I've met people just like on the subway several times, actually. Being a regular at a place of business. Everyone's kind of checking each other out in New York, I feel. So
I know, everyone's when you horny, I love it.
Yeah, when you give someone the eyes or like the green light, they're just like... And then that's almost like I don't even want them to talk to me. I just like the tension of that when you're making eyes with someone. And I'm like, no, don't come over here. I just like this tension. Let's keep it forever.
Yeah, that's very real. I had actually never been on a dating app before I moved to New York City. Yeah. And that's only to say that's not any sort of like, a, ooh, look at me. That, number one, like, I mean, I guess I'd been on Grindr, but that's like, that's a...
you're like this.
that's not exactly a date. That's a... what am I trying to say? That's an anything goes app, which is great because it's very low pressure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's it's straight people's Tinder.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
But also I was a bartender at a gay bar four or five nights a week. I was always surrounded by 50 gay people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At least. It's
a hotbed of activity.
What do I need to download on my phone? You're all right here in front of me. You know what I mean? So that was honestly a new experience for me moving here and doing that randomly. And I was like, oh, I guess this is how people meet.
Now that I think about it, when I was playing music more, well, no one's playing music anymore these days publicly, but like when I was going to shows more, playing in bands more, I would meet a lot of people through the music community.
Totally.
So that was one way. Did I date any of them? Not really. Well, one of them I did actually, but that was it. I was also like in a band with a partner at the time for a lot of it. So obviously I wasn't like hooking up with any other people.
Yeah.
You know what? Come to think of it, my first Tinder date, I actually ended up dating for quite a while.
Oops.
Yeah, I know. Which is ironic, but haha. Anyway, that's all I'll say on that. Ooh, here's a spicy take. What are your thoughts about companies describing fragrances as oriental?
We've kind of talked about this, right? It just feels dated.
It is dated, but I still don't like it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it's, yeah, we could do better.
We could do better.
It's so oriental, if you're just joining us, is one of the categories of scent.
Yes. It's like a family of notes.
Yeah, it's a go-to way to describe, yes, a scent. So yes, while we as a society do not use the word oriental, apparently no one in fragrance received that memo. And so calling a fragrance oriental as it stands is not widely thought of as problematic, but it doesn't feel good.
No. And the idea is that it refers to scents and notes from the quote-unquote Orient.
Yes, thank
you. So spices.
Right.
You know, like saffron, cinnamon, clove, star anise, whatever. Clove, all of the things from the spice trail.
Yeah, so it's a catch-all, and
why don't you just call it spice?
I don't see any reason why we couldn't just move away from that.
Is oud oriental?
I have no idea.
Is the Middle East considered the Orient? I don't know. Because I know like in England, they consider the Middle East like Asia.
Yeah.
So is that, I don't know.
I just don't see, coming from a beauty copywriter perspective, I don't see anywhere that oriental would live consumer facing that, mm-hmm, one, couldn't be switched out, and two, another word or descriptor wouldn't do the job,
yeah,
better to, yeah, the consumer reading it.
It's laziness.
I just don't think it reads. If someone isn't so deeply involved in fragrance, yeah, that might not,
that's
mean
true,
anything,
you're
to,
right,
them. And it's like, not only does this suck, it's like not doing what you
it's not
want
doing its
it
job
to,
yeah,
do.
It's almost like internal speak that like shouldn't be consumer facing.
Yeah. And again, like, I don't mean to be like, you know, super social justice warrior, but it's like, doesn't need that.
We
could do better. In the same way that I wouldn't put a fougere on a product page without anything else to extrapolate what that would mean, I wouldn't put oriental because it sucks. You know, like
it's just dated, and you're right. It doesn't communicate what the scent actually is. And I feel like fragrance is such a historic, hierarchical, is that a fucking word?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who knows?
Sure. Yeah. It's like such an old school industry, you know, and the gatekeepers in fragrance are like so much more established than like the gatekeepers in makeup or skincare.
Yeah.
Because it's like the type of industry that like you have to go to school for, and there's all like only a couple like really prestigious academies, and like, everybody's French because for some reason France is like the capital of fragrance. And it's just things that have been longstanding. But now with all of these new perfume brands coming up that have been emerging, mm-hmm, we can think of better words.
Yeah. And I don't mean to say that you have to dumb something down for the consumer, because you don't. Like, the consumer is smart.
It just doesn't make sense to me anymore.
Yeah. It feels dated. It feels bad. And it doesn't feel serviceable in the way that it should.
So yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think if we were to switch it out and just talk about,
it's just obsolete.
Warm or spicy or whatever. Yeah. Like, you wouldn't miss anything.
Oh, yeah. So. I think it's an obsolete term.
Yeah.
Period.
Period.
Okay, last question. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite food scent? Bread.
Cupcake.
Oh, I love food so much. Oof.
Are we talking? Oh, wait, I think I'm misunderstanding the question, though my answer will not change.
Like gourmand or like actual food?
Are we talking about like food scents in fragrance or just the scent of food?
I read it as just the scent of food.
My answer remains the same.
Okay. That's fair. I was just like, what food do I like smelling? I love all food.
I would also say marinara sauce.
I was just thinking that. I was like, pasta, lasagna. Yeah. I'm kind of hungry now. So I'm just like, lasagna.
Yeah.
Fave food scent. Okay. If translated as like a favorite gourmand scent, mm-hmm, coffee
would
be one of mine.
That was my actually first, mm-hmm, answer.
Coffee and lasagna. Those are my favorite food scents. Yes. Okay. I kind of knew this would be a chunky episode.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Chunky.
It's a chunky episode.
Well, thank you for joining us today, and thank you for all of your questions.
I hope that satisfied some of you.
Yeah. I was really looking forward to this episode, and it did not disappoint. I'm so glad that we did this, and we will definitely do another one, but not for a while.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be like a biannual.
I think twice a year is good.
Yeah. So save them up for next time.
Yeah.
Or just DM us. That's awesome.
Exactly. We'll save them. Well, thank you for joining us again. We hope you have a very great new year. Yes. We hope that the new year brings you everything you want. Please be safe New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. Don't drink and drive.
Oh God.
But I don't know where you'd be
driving. I forgot that people still do that.
Yeah.
Stop. Morons. Don't do it.
I don't know where they'd be driving, Sable, since we are all socially distancing and quarantining, but that's America, not my business.
Get it together, America.
I know, please, God. Anyways, follow me on Instagram. I'm at TinyBug.
I'm at Sabletooth Tigra, and we are at smellyoulater.mp3.
Leave us 5 stars and a review. We love you. Smell you later.
We love you. Smell you later in 2021.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.